Thank you for joining Five's a Crowd. Just a quick disclaimer, this episode may not be appropriate for all ages.
Godzilla versus King Kong trailer drops on Saturday.
I saw a clip. King Kong was bigger than I thought.
Agreed.
I guess didn't they? Well, maybe they said. I think they said that he's like young, and so in the movie, King Kong Skull Island or whatever, he's actually still young.
Oh,
so he's still growing.
So maybe he's bigger. Sounds
like Godzilla's kind of a big deal.
Who are you going for?
Yeah, Godzilla.
Godzilla.
Thank you. Yes,
Gojira.
Kong. You're going for Kong, aren't you?
Come on. Do you remember, like, what was it, 2000s Godzilla with Matthew Broderick?
Yeah.
That was so good.
Yeah. With who?
So
oh, Godzilla, yeah.
So it's bummed actually, they never made another one.
It's actually funny.
Is he the worm guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
On the post with the trailer dropping or whatever, I read someone's comment on there, and they were like, well, let's see. Godzilla defeated some ancient three-headed monster and, like, dominated. And King Kong was over there struggling with some
Samuel L. Jackson.
You know, he's like with some helicopters and stuff. It could barely even do anything. I wonder who's going to win this. But it's 2021. We've got to make fair for everybody. So
see that was kind of my
argument.
That was my argument when they came out with Alien versus Predator. Like they have to give Alien a advantage, so they make it so Predator can't get his guns for the first little bit.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say that's basically like. Man versus deer.
Right? Accurate.
Yeah, exactly.
That's very accurate, yeah. Man versus deer.
Speaking of hunting.
Oh, my gosh.
No? Is that a wrong way to come into this?
That's a very wrong way to come into this, but all right.
You could have driven around it, but you went straight at it.
You're in and out. Let's go for it.
Take it away. Yes.
I like it.
Take it away.
Welcome to Five's a Crowd, ladies and gents. We're here with the five idiots, Cam, Chris, Austin, Zach, and myself, Tony.
Hey, yo.
Yep.
Today, it's going to get kind of heavy. We're going to talk about Theodore Robert Cowell, or as you might know him, Ted Bundy.
Or as Zach knows him, Tim Bundy, what was that?
Tom Bundy.
Tom Bundy.
Is that Tom Bundy?
Wait a second, Bundy. I thought his name was Theodore Robert Bundy.
It is. We'll get to that.
Oh, all right. Yeah. All right, yeah. I'm along for the ride today.
Me too.
So, I'll start. So, as I mentioned, Theodore Robert Cowell is his birth name. Born November 24th, 1946.
In Burlington, Vermont.
Yes, thank you.
So, like you're reading like his,
I know
like,
you're doing an essay.
His dating profile. It's like his Tinder profile.
Some got my facts right here.
Some of that paper again.
Anyway, from what I read is he did not know who his father was. He was raised by, well, his single mother, but they lived with his grandparents. And in order to avoid the stigma of having a child out of wedlock, the grandparents claimed to be the parents and his mother was his older sister, in quotations.
And he didn't know that for years.
No.
Right.
He himself believed that they were his parents and that was his older sister.
In fact, it was later said that he actually kind of resented his mother for hiding that from him.
Yeah. I think that might be.
Well, how could you not?
Yeah.
Right.
Like to find out that you lived with your mother, but your mother didn't tell you she was your mother.
Right.
How weird would that be for the mom?
Mm-hmm.
Like exactly.
You want to nurture your child, but you got to do it in a sisterly way.
You can't tell me what to do. You're not my mom.
Well, son.
But and so with his grandparents, I was kind of reading. So his grandma was very. What was the word they used? Like obedient, I think was the word they used. She actually had to go through therapy, the electroshock therapy and stuff from what I read. I don't again, let's say this starting now. This is just facts found on the internet.
Real quick. So. I think my mic just went out.
Nope. We can hear you. Fine.
I can't hear myself.
So like your headphones went out.
Yes. Yeah, something's like going in and out. Ah.
Are you back?
There we go. Okay. That was like the weirdest thing in the world.
Such a problem.
Game on. Popped it back in. but yeah, and then his grandfather was supposedly, so he was the one that Ted said he connected with, but yet they say his grandfather was a very abusive man, abused his wife, the dog.
I read he would kick dogs and cats.
Yeah.
It didn't even matter if it was theirs.
He would swing cats by the tail.
Mm-hmm. What?
Yeah.
He supposedly.
I do that, but.
No, I'm just kidding.
you better add clarity. Yeah. He does not. That was a very dark joke.
Here comes Tom Bindi.
That's what it was.
The redheaded brother.
He said, so the grandfather even.
Real quick, sorry. On a side note, I don't do that, but my mother-in-law.
Oh, no.
She has actually killed a cat accidentally. they had found some kittens or something or other, and they're trying to help them out, take care of them. She was loading the dishwasher, and one got into the dishwasher.
Oh.
She didn't know it, and she closed it and started it. Come to find out, like, they kept hearing weird noises and then didn't hear anything, and she went to the dishwasher, opened it up, and the kitten.
We need a new dishwasher. It's hissing.
Oh my gosh. You know what's sad is people are probably going to be more sad about that story than the fact that Bundy killed so many people.
Yeah. Right? Like 30, right? He killed 30
people. Confirmed 30. He said he killed
36.
Upward of 100.
He confessed to only 30.
I think they only found evidence of 30.
Okay. I thought it was in his last days in jail that he actually confessed to 30.
At one point, he's quoted saying that on his first couple of kills, he was just killing, I forgot how he said it, willy-nilly. Like, he didn't use those words. But and it wasn't until 1974 that he got his groove. And 1974 is when his first kill happened.
And that was in Washington, correct?
Right.
Yeah.
So according to him, by the time what we know as his first kill, he considered himself a pro by that point. So he could have been killing way before that.
Yeah, it shows right here, January 1974. Bundy's very first crime was sexual assault of Karen Sparks, 18, a University of Washington student.
Mm-hmm. She was a classmate, I believe. Like they were connected in some way.
If I remember right, I think he'd kidnapped her in an alleyway, correct?
It says he broke into her apartment while she was sleeping and beat her with a metal rod before sexually assaulting her.
Yeah.
She survived, but was in a coma for 10 days after the attack. Gosh.
That's crazy.
She just came out a couple of years ago and like opened up about it.
Really?
From what I was seeing.
Because 2019 was the 30-year anniversary of his death.
Hmm.
And that's why that movie with Zac Efron came out. Some people were talking about it and stuff. But yes, you are correct. He admitted to killing 30 women. Reports show that he might have killed at least 90 to 100.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez. Now, I watched the Ted Bundy tapes, and those were really good.
Dude, they're so disturbing, though, to hear him talk is just, I don't know what it is. Like,
it's like you're listening to the devil himself.
You're in the presence of evil, yeah.
Well, and that's the sad thing about him, too, though, is he didn't portray that, which is why he got a lot of these women the way he did, because
that's what makes it so much more eerie.
And because he was so charming and so suave and debonair.
Well, and women found him attractive.
Yeah, that it was just so easy to, you know, he even played the game of, oh, my arm's broken. I need some help moving this furniture into my van or whatever.
On crutches.
Yeah.
And before that, even in school, so he was saying he didn't understand the concept of friendship. He thought the idea of friendship was a waste of time, yet they were saying that in school he was actually very well liked and very popular. And so
wasn't he an introvert at first, though? He was very introverted.
Yes. And that's just it, is he was like, like I can't help but think of Dexter, if you've ever watched Dexter.
Okay. Oh, I love it.
Okay. I feel like the producers of Dexter must have done their homework on serial killers, because the way they portray Dexter is almost how this read, where he knows he's different and he knows he can't have that close relationship, but yet he's smart enough to play the part. To
fake it.
Yeah.
Well, he's a sociopath, right?
Yeah. Right.
So he has, a sociopath is someone who can't feel feelings. Is that correct?
As far as I know.
They emulate what they see.
Yeah. They just don't feel them, but they can fake them.
He would practice how to act, how to talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and so in his early life, when his mother finally did remarry, she married the man with, I can't remember his first name, but his last name is Bundy. Johnny Bundy?
Yeah, it was Johnny Culpepper Bundy.
That's How old was he when that happened?
He, so she
moved.
Say.
She moved to, so his mom and him moved to Tacoma, Washington in 1951.
Yeah.
And where she met Johnny. It doesn't say.
So it was like five-ish? Because he was born in 46? Yeah,
roughly.
Yeah, so five. But, yeah, that's why I was thinking.
But his stepfather and his mom had four more children. And he does admit that he had always felt unloved, like by his mother, by his stepfather and stuff like that. And he didn't ever like have a close relationship with any of his siblings.
But with that though, he claims that, but I heard that they still tried to involve him. Like they went on family campouts and different things like that. And he chose not to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it could be part of, you know, having like sociopathic tendencies, things like that, like not truly perceiving that love, or they did include him, but it was a reluctant inclusion. It's like, you are still our child, but these four were our creation. You're just the extra.
At the same time too, though, he said that his family was a very good Christian family, but he just had feelings of,
well, kind of
Satanism.
was it him that said by the age 15, he had thoughts. He started having thoughts constantly that weren't okay to share.
Yeah. But he said it was because of literature he was looking at. Really made that profound.
See, kind of backing up a little bit, it showed that there was a story that when he was still living with his grandparents, so this is younger than age five,
three.
You said three, yeah. He, or his aunt, I think it was it his aunt?
Yeah.
She woke up from a nap surrounded by knives, and Bundy at 3 years old just standing there smiling at
what?
Her.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
3 years old.
Bro, don't give me those nightmares. Nice. Mike is almost three.
Wade pointed out.
We all know the face that Brinley gives.
Brinley's past that. She hasn't shown any more signs. Okay, good. But no, but once they moved into Washington, Bundy said that he would roam the neighborhoods digging through trash cans, mm-hmm. trying to find naked pictures.
Yeah.
And then he also liked to look at crime novels and magazines, especially the ones that were about sexual violence and had pictures. Like he liked the ones that were illustrated. And he said that like the images and stuff that would make a normal person cringe didn't even faze him.
Basically a lot of imagery of women being subdued, tied up, correct. In handcuffs, whatever.
Right.
Especially in those crime novels. And so that led him to get into, he talked about being into like violent pornography.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he got into
System of a Down song.
And then yes, it is. You are correct.
I'm sorry, anyways.
And it actually came into my mind when I said
oh, okay.
That is correct. But not right.
But yeah. Yeah. So when he was a kid too, he would make traps and put sticks.
Oh, the tiger traps.
Yeah, he'd make tiger traps.
So what exactly is a tiger trap for those who don't know?
He would dig a hole. And what he would do is take sticks and carve points on them.
Okay.
And he'd put them in the bottom and then cover it with debris and leaves. And he'd just leave it out in the middle of the woods. And there was actually a young girl who fell into one of those traps.
And it just hurt her leg. Slid all the way up. Like one of the sticks cut all the way up her leg.
Yep.
Ooh.
Yeah. And she was lucky that's all that happened.
Which is I mean, me as a kid, I'd made frog traps where I dig a little hole so frogs would go in there and I'd grab them. But I never did.
I actually dug little holes in the backyard, covered them with leaves. There were no spikes.
Just to the extent that how much energy a little kid like this. Think about this: a little kid like that digging a big, huge hole like that with spikes in it,
mm-hmm. right?
That's something.
With pure intent.
To hurt something, to cause pain.
Well, yeah. I read, and I don't know how true this part is, but kind of around the same time as the traps, he actually hit a kid over the head with like a big log or something like that, just to see how it went.
He wanted to hear how it sounded.
I think of just Rob Zombie's version of Halloween when Michael Myers ends up beating that kid. Like that serial killer instinct. I don't know. I feel like those poor people are messed up from the beginning. But
they said he had an IQ of 136, which is considered gifted.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like what
is the average IQ? To put it on a scale,
80 or something. I have no idea.
Google. So
we can find out real quick.
I was going to say that just to put in a scale like that would technically make him like very smart, right? On the higher spectrum.
Gifted,
like that.
Yeah.
Average is 90 to 110.
90 to 110.
And he was at 135?
136, which puts him in very superior intelligence.
See.
Above 140, just to give you an idea, is near genius. Or is considered genius.
Wow.
So I'm probably like in the 80s range.
I was going to say the same.
I'm a solid 72.
About me, not you.
No, that's fine. It's fine. Whatever.
Can your IQ fluctuate? Because I feel like on nights when I'm with you guys, it takes a dip.
takes a dip.
Takes some time to recover until the next episode.
No, I'm way watching some of the children's shows they have on TV now.
It's contagious. Hello, IQ. It's contagious.
They talk about studies with different serial killers and like the intent to harm animals is something prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
Like you see him like just killing animals and hurting them with no remorse.
But that's not to be confused with hunters at all.
Well, yeah, they don't do anything. They just discard them hold them as a trophy
of killing. Yeah,
do it in a torturous manner.
Exactly. Like,
yeah.
With malintent, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. So not to go like super dark, but a few episodes ago, we were trying to think of reasons to like certain situations where murder should be legal. Is there like a certain age when if you get a super rotten egg like this kind of kid where you're like, yeah, this kid's.
I'd wait for him to get a driver's license.
16?
And then I take
the brake line.
I would, dude. I don't
make it look like an accident.
Everything about this, I just makes me sound horrible.
Funny. It's funny you bring that up. There's a TV show, called Defending Jacob, and it's about this.
Ooh.
So it's about this in the way that this kid ends up dead, and then all this evidence comes out, and it kind of points to the kid. But it not necessarily, it could also point to someone else. So this whole time, like the whole series, it's only one season. It's like a mini series. You see them not only trying to figure out who actually did this, but they're blaming they're blaming the kid for it. And so you see his parents and what they're going through, trying to truly like they want to believe their son that he didn't do it. But then things are happening that kind of make them question that belief. And it's wild because it goes back and forth and it truly makes you think like, what would I do?
Like a psycho thriller.
Yeah. Cause you're like, what the heck? Like if I knew my kid did this, what would I do? Would I do something about it? Or would I try to protect him? Like it's wild. It's totally a mind bender and makes you think about this exact scenario.
If somebody had killed and I knew for a doubt, without a doubt that he'd killed a woman or two women like that. I don't know, man. I think I would do it, and then I just go turn myself in. Like, not. I would, dude. This pisses me off.
Well, that's the thing.
I
get so mad. Would you want to, like, turn him into the authorities or deal with it yourself? Well,
let's say he's a suspect, but they can't arrest him, but you know it's going to happen again. I don't know, man.
Yeah.
That's what's so...
It's a heavy topic, but it's definitely, like... Because even if, as a kid, right, he's going to get tried as a kid. Or like, what's the age where you can get tried as an adult?
I think it honestly depends on what they can prove.
I've listened to a lot of crime podcasts, and there's times where a kid's 15, 16 years old, but the murder is so
horrific
that they do try him as an adult.
Or like horrific and like thought out and planned and like premeditated.
Yeah.
Ugh, okay. Sorry.
So, and real quick though, to put in perspective of sometimes with the parents, I listened to one. This one is horrible, beyond horrible. Without getting into any detail, there was a kid who killed a little girl in his neighborhood, and he ended up having a waterbed and stuffed her body.
Oh my gosh!
Inside the water, like he took out a panel on the very side of his bed and put her underneath the waterbed.
Oh my!
And the mom went into that room and was kind of smelling something funky, and then she saw a piece of the bed was broken, and she goes, "Ah, this dang kid's getting mad." And so she went to go fix it, and it popped down, and she found the body of this little girl. The neighborhood they were looking for. In fact, that kid was out looking, helping the people look for this girl. And he got back home, and she like basically sat him in the chair and said, "You're going to tell me what happened." And he finally broke down, explained, and it has the whole details on 911. And she called, and she's like, "You need to come pick up my son." She was in tears, just bawling. Yeah. And she's like, "You need to come pick up my son."
See, I think that's what if I was a parent, is I would turn my kid in. I would hope that they didn't get the death penalty or anything, but I would make sure that they were behind bars for the rest of their life.
Savable or something like that. You know,
and I'd probably still be that parent and visit them in prison and everything like that, but I would make sure they were behind bars for the rest of their life.
I wouldn't give up on them, but I'd make sure that they answered for what they did and that they couldn't harm anybody else.
So on Bundy, that was actually one thing I found kind of interesting. You saying that kid was actually part of the search party and stuff. I saw that, and this is kind of jumping forward a little bit, but Bundy, he actually joined like a crime prevention team, and he specifically wrote like directions for women on how to avoid rape. And yet here he is out doing it.
Yeah.
So he was trying to make it harder for his victims.
He was taking the straw.
He was making it harder for himself because it was too easy.
Basically.
I don't know if that's it. It's just a side story. It's why would this guy be out doing this when he's telling women how to not do it?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's
weird. Well, and I mean, it totally was a game for him because like you look at, I'm looking at like an article in Psychology Today kind of trying to analyze him as much as they can, because he very well might be one of like the most infamous serial killers. Like everybody knows who Ted Bundy is or has heard about him.
Yeah.
Even before all the Netflix stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I mean, they talk in here, they say that he had a cool and unemotional demeanor combined with a keen intellect and a charming personality, which makes him a very effective psychopathic killer. He lacked interpersonal empathy. He was unable to feel pity or remorse. He did not value human life or care about the consequences of his crimes. He was callous, indifferent, and extremely brutal in his interactions with his victims.
Well, they were possessions to him.
He was very much a power and control type like person. Mm-hmm. So he would, you know, admit power and control over these women, and he would prolong, he was very patient, and he would prolong their murder essentially. So like to take his sadistic pleasure out of all of it. But he, going back to like the game we were kind of talking about, he would take the trophies of jewelry off the women he killed and give them to the women who were important to him in his life. And he would tell them like he found it on the street. He's like, "I want you to have this." And that was his like secret game. So seeing them wear the trophies of the women that he killed was just like the sick little game for him that brought him pleasure.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, when you were sitting there describing all this stuff, it's crazy to me how many parallels you see between Ted Bundy and Jeffrey Epstein. When you start thinking of like the power hungry, the powerhouses that are sociopaths and like basically control the room. They are in control at all times.
Exactly.
It's creepy, man.
Exactly.
See, that's why in a young age he started burglary. It kind of started out with different kinds of burglary because he wasn't stealing because he had to. He just liked to be able to look at this possession that now he has because he wanted it and he went out and got it.
He also, he was from humble beginnings and mm-hmm. he always wanted to be in the high class and he always thought he deserved it. So he's very narcissistic as well. Mm-hmm. It's just a deadly cocktail.
He said basically, like in some of his interviews and stuff, he said the fantasy that accompanies and generates the anticipation that precedes the crime is always more stimulating than the immediate aftermath of the crime itself. So essentially he was stuck in this just loop because he would anticipate the act, the like kidnapping, the murder, all of it. And I mean, one of the worst things, I don't know if I knew this before and just blocked it out or forgot about it, but he's a necrophile. So he would violate the women because there was no, they could not reject him.
Mm-hmm. Well, so to add to that, it was saying that he wouldn't just do sexual things. He would dress them up. One of them, he said he shampooed her hair, put makeup on her, got her dressed how he wanted. And he was quoted saying something along the lines of that. Like when they're in that state, you can make them whatever you want them to be.
Yeah.
Wow, that's gross.
Where you're talking about, and when you're talking about where he'd be in the cycle. So there was a detective when he was in the Washington, Oregon area that picked up a clue that the first two, he'd kill two 23 days apart, and then he'd kill two others 32 days apart, and then 20, and then 23, two at 23, two at 36 again. So he had this pattern.
Like a cadence?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's crazy. But from what he explained in his last days is it'd like build and build and build, and then he'd have to let it out. And
it's like a pressure cooker. Yeah. Like he just.
And then it'd just be on those patterns. But
well, I think that would play right in line with his anticipatory, you know what I mean? Because if it's like, all right, 4 weeks out, you know. Bam.
Yeah.
He mm-hmm. could build, and he probably had some sort of system almost like.
Well, and he did have a lot of patterns because a lot of the women he would go after had very similar features.
Mm-hmm. They were,
they were all brunettes and whatnot.
Parted down the middle.
And it was so bad. Like this got so publicized to the point that women were bleaching their hair.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to be the type that he was looking for.
Shoulder length. Parted down the middle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Usually in, I think it said blue slacks or blue jeans. They even were wearing certain things.
Wow. Right? Very specific.
Yeah.
So let's keep walking down this timeline because I'm curious to see how he kind of evolves into this evil character.
Well,
he started young, but.
Well, again, he was smart because I'm not sure what he was going to school for in Washington, but I imagine it's the same thing he was going to school for in Utah, which was to be a lawyer.
Yes.
Yeah, he was going to law school. Yeah.
Yes. He did psychology, though. He did a psychology class, too.
He didn't? Oh, my gosh. Like, it's...
That, and he was getting into politics.
Yep.
It's so wild.
But that was for a status thing for him, what they feel like.
Yeah. Was this way down the line? Did we have more to cover in his childhood and teens?
No, I mean, his childhood was really just that. Like, he... Like there's conflicting stories. Yeah. Some that say he had a good Christian family. Some that say he had an abusive family. And then you have the tiger traps and the girl that got hurt. They believe he murdered a neighbor.
Yes.
Was actually one of his first victims, but they never could fully tie it to him.
When he was 14. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And it was actually from an article I was reading. He idolized his uncle, and his uncle was a piano teacher. And so his uncle was teaching this girl who went missing. And so
when it was a very publicized abduction, missing girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it was until way after, like after he was caught for the other stuff that they actually thought. Well,
right. They
maybe
put it together because it was in Tacoma, Washington, where
mm-hmm.
he grew up. And so they were like, well, Bundy, he lived down just a few houses, so but Bundy never admitted to it, so they don't know.
Yeah, and basically, like his first attack is believed, other than that one, is believed to be in January of 1974,
and that was at Sparks.
Yep, that's Karen Sparks. She was 18, a student, University of Washington. He broke into her apartment, you know, beat her with the rod and stuff. But yeah, like she survived, had brain damage, has no memory of what happened to her.
But he never admitted to that one, right? Because the first one he actually admitted to was Healy, Linda Ann Healy, mm-hmm. was the first one that he actually
was admitted his first to. Confirmed murder.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just one month later.
1 month later in February. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was also a student at University of Washington. Mm-hmm. He broke into her apartment. He abducted her and then later confessed to her murder. Yeah. I'm assuming like way later. But from the span of July 1974, they believe he killed 8 women in Seattle.
So that's 10 total so far. Yeah,
so he's already at 10, and we haven't even left 1974 yet.
Yep. And he's not even 30 years old. He's what, 28, I think?
Yeah, I think so.
Somewhere
yeah.
in there.
Yeah. And they had no idea. And so he's killed 10 women, and law enforcement has no idea that it's him. There's not even a trace.
Yeah, oh yeah, like all the people that knew him were like, no, he's too like
straightforward.
They couldn't even think of suspecting him in something like this because he was too nice and charming and good of a person.
And that's what it said. So kind of jumping around a tiny bit, after Utah, that's what they said is after they finally got somewhat of a sketch and they released it, everybody was like, I know that sketch, but, and so they would call into the authorities and the authorities are like, nah, that's not him. He's a clean cut, law student, blah, blah, blah.
Well, and even in Washington though. So
yeah,
he right. actually got suspected. He didn't get booked or anything, but he got suspected in Washington after the 10 and it was at the lake, when the two women went missing at Lake Sammamish is where two women disappeared. Mm-hmm. But I think he'd gotten his confidence so up thinking he could get away with it. Sorry.
No, I was going to just say that he actually took those women in broad daylight.
Yes.
It was in the middle. Like it was a heavy packed yes. out beach that day. And he went and asked him for help. I think he used a sling.
He would use fake casts and slings.
Reeled them back to his car and then knocked both of them out, threw him in the back of his car and drove off.
He asked him to help him put his sailboat on his car.
Yeah.
But he asked
him. Supposedly. They haven't had any proof that he did anything.
But he asked him in front of their friends and said his name was Ted.
Yeah.
And his vehicle. Yep. So.
Yeah. Well, and at that time, wasn't he driving around a VW bug?
It was a VW. Oh, yeah. Yes.
He did that for most of it.
Light brown.
They actually have it in some museum.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I would burn that thing.
Oh, freak. Right? Yeah, dude. Yeah. So he moves to Utah where he continues to go to law school.
What year was this?
This was in like 70.
Wasn't it? It was 75, like 76.
Yeah, it was right after.
Yeah.
The Sammamish because.
So it was still 74. It was October, November 74. Yeah, because
he was starting to get picked up on in Washington.
Yes, they were starting to get on the trail. And his girlfriend at the time was just like, no, there's no way. And he had a girlfriend who had a daughter that he was with.
Yes.
At the time in Washington.
Yes. And her family was from Utah, which isn't that the reason, another reason why it led them to Utah?
I don't know if that's the same one or if that's the one that he met after that, the first one.
Okay.
It's right in that.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, like coming to Utah, he ended up joining the LDS church.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like he
talked
totally
to the missionaries, got baptized,
blended in, tried to be one. Like he was really good at hiding in plain sight, mm-hmm. like totally coming off as this clean cut, like good, just straightforward, good guy. And I've always heard stories of like people seeing his Beetle parked at like East High in Salt Lake.
Yeah.
He would watch, you know, high school girls and like look for his next victim.
One of his victims was from Viewmont in Bountiful.
It's so weird. And I think that's why we chose him as our first like thing is that it's so close to home.
Didn't he get closer than that? Didn't he? Wasn't one of the girls from Bonneville or closer than that?
From what I read, the closest was Bountiful.
Okay. What? What am I doing?
Turn your mic down to your face.
Why?
There you go. You're kind of quiet.
Oh.
But I've heard this story. I honestly don't know if this is just urban legend or if this has actually happened. Maybe you guys have heard this too. But I've heard a story of a couple who was out on a date late one night in Provo. and they were in a park, like walking down a walking path, and they came to this like kind of these trees that shrouded the path a little bit, and the girl started to get scared because it was just dark, and she's like, I don't know. And the guy's like, no, come on, let's go, like let's walk down, and like they keep going, and then they both kind of stop, and they just had this weird, just eerie, just creepy feeling, and the guy's like, you know, yeah, you know what, let's just go back. And so they turn around, and they go back to the car. Well, later. And I guess he, Ted Bundy, confirmed that the time he was closest to getting caught by some random people, he was on a walking path in Provo, hiding in these trees just off the path with a woman that he had just like killed.
Uh-huh.
So he like had killed her. He was off to the side. These people came and he was going to take them out if they discovered him, obviously, but they didn't. So again, like, take it with a grain of salt. I don't know. I haven't had a chance to like fully dive in and see if it's true, but I've heard the story actually multiple places.
I've heard that as well.
Mm. Well, that's the hard thing about Ted Bundy too, is he had multiple, well, I don't know how many interviews, but he had some interviews mainly with one guy towards the end there when he was getting on death row. But even that guy was like, this guy is still so manipulative.
Oh yeah.
Like he's like, I'm having these interviews with him and he's still manipulative. Like I can't believe half the stuff that he's saying to me.
Yeah.
So, he could have even said something like that. And it was like, the guy is like, are you sure? Like, you know, you take it with a grain of salt, because even Ted Bundy in the end days was still lying about a lot of stuff.
Why would he like, he feels no remorse. He feels no empathy or no.
Which
pain for what he did. Why would he tell the truth in the end?
And that's what always confused me. He had no remorse, no empathy. I mean, granted, yeah, it's like, I don't care. I'm not going to tell you guys what happened. But at the same time, it's like, man, why don't you just confess it all, man? Like, just give peace to these people.
But that's probably back, why. Why would he?
It comes back to him needing to be in control, though. He loved the fact that that's he knew where the bodies were and nobody else did.
And that he liked the attention at the end of it. I mean, this whole trial went like celebrity status.
Right.
He loved.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
it's crazy.
Gosh, there was, again, kind of jumping around a little bit, but you just saying the trial thing. At one point, he could have taken a plea bargain and basically gotten off, but he couldn't admit to being guilty. And so he passed up the plea deal because the plea deal meant he would have to plead guilty.
Well, and don't forget, he was representing himself.
Yes.
Yeah. He didn't have a lawyer. He was his own lawyer the whole time.
Not at first. The very first trial, he had a lawyer.
Let's get to that, but let's go back to Utah for a minute.
Yeah.
Good old Utah. Can keep it.
Kind of keep it chronological, easier to follow.
Yeah. So.
Do you have more about Utah?
I know there was at one point, which is actually really weird, and I know this officer kind of beat himself up about it. There was one point where they had suspicion of what was going on, and an officer had pulled him over. And he had a mask in the back seat.
Yes.
He gloves, had gloves, tape, twine, rope, whatever. Mm-hmm. And this officer was very suspicious of everything. And I can't remember why, but he ended up letting him go.
He booked him. Yes. That's when he got booked to Murray Jail.
But he got away. Like nobody...
No,
he pinned it on him.
He got expedited to Colorado because he had to take a jump to Colorado.
Okay, so wait, is this after Carol Duranche?
Carol Duranche is first.
So Carol Duranche is the woman that he tried to kidnap.
Yes.
But she ended up escaping.
Was that the girl in the Sears parking lot? He tried to abduct her and she ended up being able to squirm away?
No.
So
she was the first one, because a couple women have gotten away from him.
With her.
Yeah, she was shopping. So I think you're right.
Yes. But he played off to be an officer with her, right?
Yeah.
So he played off to be an officer.
A police detective. He was a police detective.
In his Volkswagen. This is how crazy this
guy. How convincing he was.
He was a police. He showed a fake badge.
That's right.
And convinced her to get in the car where he assaulted her in that vehicle. Well, in the skirmish, he was trying to handcuff her. He handcuffed her arm. I'm getting chills. This is gross, man.
Ew.
So... he handcuffs her, and in the skirmish, he ends up throwing the other handcuff on the same arm instead of getting both her arms handcuffed, to where she escaped out of the vehicle, and she got in a car with a couple that was behind, and he took off, and then she went and filed the report.
Yeah, because he approached her saying that somebody tried to break into her car.
Yes.
That she needed to come down to the station to file a report. He tried to also hit her with a crowbar.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it wasn't until she pointed out, she's like, this isn't the way to the police station.
Yeah.
And so when she started to come onto it, that's when he tried to knock her out. Mm-hmm. And then the whole handcuff situation.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's what led to his arrest in August of 1975.
Yeah, because he was driving around kind of funky, and that's when the cop pulled him over, thought the stuff was for a burglary. And so, and I want to say, was it that time they ended up finding the strands of hair from three different women?
In the vehicle.
And they were saying that the fact that it was three different women in the same vehicle is just beyond coincidence.
Yeah, so he ended up getting booked for aggravated assault on her. They had no idea,
Well, yeah, and they
didn't
know
the monster they had in the car.
Well, because in January of that year, so he got arrested in August. In January, he killed Karen Eileen Campbell, so the girl you were talking about, and they found her body nude about a month later near an Aspen ski resort, and that's when he actually confessed to. But then he had killed more women even before he got arrested in August.
Yeah.
So he killed a Julianne Cunningham, Denise Lynn Oliverson, Lynette Dawn Culver, and Susan Curtis, who at the time was his longtime girlfriend. Oh, his longtime girlfriend called the police and shared her suspicions about Bundy.
Yes.
So that's when she finally noticed something weird was going on, and she shared some suspicions.
Well, she found out that all the murders had stopped once he left Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And Utah,
what was weird is he would go back to stay with her. She wouldn't tell him that she's tried to turn him in.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, a couple others, it was saying, so on October 18th, there was a Melissa Ann Smith who was 17 years old. She was a Midvale police chief daughter.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
She,
that's where he was. Midvale jail is where he got booked.
There was a Lauren Ann Aim was also 17. Yeah, just
well, and what happened too, if we looking at his longtime girlfriend, he got so comfortable with her that he started talking to her. So she noticed that news of the kidnappings and possible murders were making headlines. So she called the police, and in the conversation, she said he mentioned an incident about following a sorority girl when he was out late at night, and he would follow people like that, but he tried not to, but he just did anyway.
Yeah.
So he shared with her just things that he did.
Parts of it. Yeah.
And so she started just putting pieces together and you know, ended up calling the police and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, with that girlfriend. So she's the one that actually was in the picture for most of the time in Oregon. He actually admitted, so it says that
Washington, right?
Yeah, in Washington.
Yeah. Okay.
He decapitated, 12 of his victims?
Yeah,
and he would keep them. And
he kept their heads, but he admitted that one of them he burned in his girlfriend's fireplace.
Dang.
Back
in Utah, we confirmed this. So when he was in Utah, didn't he get expedited to Colorado because they could trace him to a killing?
Well, that's the girl that they found naked, the Campbell girl.
So I know he escaped twice.
Yes.
And it wasn't out of Utah, right?
No, it was out of Colorado.
Yes. Yeah. And so Florida. He got expedited to Colorado.
Mm-hmm. But the crazy, with that escape, the reason why he was able to escape is because he was acting as his own attorney, however you phrase
that. He won the trust of
the judge and everything. So because he was acting as his own attorney, the judge said he didn't need to wear handcuffs or ankle shackles
in the library. Yeah.
Well, not yet. So he didn't have to wear those. Well, then he requested to go to the library so he could do more research for his case.
Yes.
And it was in there. There was a window behind a bookshelf that he was able to jump out of. And it was
a two-story building.
Two-story window. But the crazy thing is he had prepped for this, by jumping off of his top bunk in his jail cell to strengthen his legs. And he would jump off of his top bunk over and over and over to strengthen his legs. He prepped for this.
Jeez. Dude, and then if you watched the Ted Bundy tapes, yeah. I've seen parts of it. He would smile every time. He'd be in jail. They basically had him dead to rights, and he would just sit there and be like, "Nah, I'm gonna get out."
Right.
Yeah.
Like, well, just so pompous and like arrogant about the whole thing.
But part of it too is I think he didn't know how to respond to emotion, to where he just tried to stay charismatic the whole time. Mm. Is what it is. I think he couldn't get out of character at that point. He felt like he had to stay in character.
Mm. So earlier, how I was talking about how the police kind of messed up. I was kind of looking at it. This is what it was. This is how insane, not to say that, you know, Salt Lake police messed up, but this is how close they were. So he was arrested. That officer, the highway patrolman, pulled mm-hmm. him over,
yep.
saw all the suspicious stuff, ended up arresting him because his car also matched the one from Carol Durant or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so they brought him in. In the meantime, they got a warrant to go search his apartment.
Oh, that's right.
And they searched everywhere. They found a playbill from the Viewmont High School where one of the other girls was kidnapped and gone mm-hmm. missing. And they had all this circumstantial evidence, but nothing to hold him yes. on. And so they ended up having to let him go on his own recognizance. And he later said that the police searching his apartment missed by like a few feet. He's like, if they found this, they were a few feet away from finding a stash of photographs that he had taken of all his dead victims.
Polaroid Dude. Pictures.
Yeah, Polaroid pictures. And he eventually realized how close he was, so he went and burned them all.
Mm. See, and you want to hear something messed up about that? They asked him why. Like, they asked him, why did you take Polaroid pictures of your victims? And he said, when you work hard to do something right, you don't want to forget it.
Oh,
yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
See, and that's in the meantime, after they had let him go, I believe he had gone off and I didn't look into it, but I believe he'd gone off and murdered a couple more people after that. Like he just, and so basically if the police would have caught that, it would have stopped a couple.
It's more. Crazy.
Now, how do they know that he was just a few feet from?
Cause he admitted it. He admitted it. He later in his own yeah, things, right. he admitted, he had said that they were so close. He's like, if they found, I don't know what it was. He was just like, if they found these few items, and if they found those few items, they were within feet of finding these Polaroids.
Like, did they not upturn that room?
And they must not have.
Who knows? Yeah.
Just went in and just kind of just like.
Well, and here's what's crazy. Like, I'm looking at a picture of the stuff he had in his trunk. There's yeah. straight up mm-hmm. a ski mask. There's an ice pick in there. Yep.
Handcuffs,
crowbar.
And again, back to his convincing Nylon. Stories is he said, he's like, well, the ski mask is obviously for skiing.
The handcuffs in a dumpster.
Yeah. He's like, I found the handcuffs and in a dumpster.
Everything else is household items.
Yeah. And they're just, he just plays it off. Like it's no big deal.
Well, I thought he said the ski mask, he goes, the gloves and the ski mask, he was going to go shovel the snow. And so he needed that to shovel the snow.
Like either way, just think about it. If you're a man that shows no emotion.
Yeah.
How easy is it to lie? Because right. you're never going to show an emotion.
You're not going to have that jittery voice.
Or worry. You literally, and these psychologists say it, they're like, he was basically the perfect killing machine. The charm, the good looks, the keen intellect, the need to dominate, the cold-bloodedness, the psychopathic personality. He's a perfect killing machine. And people, like, it says he continues to fascinate and perplex us to this very day. Like we're still talking about, it's been over 30 years
yeah.
since he died.
I was going to say, I have to admit, watching the Ted Bundy tapes in the courtroom when he's talking, I have to admit, at one point I'm like, what if he is innocent?
Just, no, for real.
No, and I'm not saying I think he is, but like he is yeah. just so dang convincing that mm-hmm. you're just like, man. Because like at one point in the tapes, he's talking about how, he's like, Your Honor, this is a classic wrong place at the wrong time situation. He's like, I didn't do it. And it's just like, oh, yeah, maybe he's right. Like, I just,
yeah.
Oh.
He knew how to play the heartstrings well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He had a power over words.
So in Colorado, He escapes the jail, second story, but he hurts his ankle.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the library?
Yeah,
the
library. Second, jumps out of the second story.
Jumps out of the library.
Got you.
Yeah. So jumps out of the library. Runs to the woods. He steals a car, drives erratically because he hurt his ankle. He ends up getting caught again. Like, it was, what was it, days after?
Like 2 days after?
So, yeah. So he runs into the woods and gets lost. He ends up, well, he finds a hunting cabin.
Yes.
And gets a rifle, some food, and a coat or something like that. And then starts heading south of Aspen. And he ends up missing the trails that would have led him where he wanted to go, but he misses the trails. And so then he comes across like another cabin or something like that, stocks up again, but heads back to Aspen because he's lost. And that's when he steals the car.
And I remember seeing the video of the cops finding him. Yeah. And he was just like, yeah, I don't know where I'm at, or I can't remember what he was saying, but he was just so just like,
well, nonchalant. The crazy thing is there's roadblocks everywhere, because obviously by this time they've realized he's gone. Mm-hmm. There's roadblocks everywhere, and he goes back to town. Yeah. Like, I don't know. Blows my mind.
Well, and he said, like in his interview, he said, the windows are open, the fresh air is blowing through, and the sky was blue, and I said, I'm ready to go. And I walked to the window, and I jumped out.
Yeah.
Honest, I just got sick and tired of being locked up.
Well, and then
for something that he didn't commit is what he was saying.
Like, well, and the craziest part is so he's defending himself. He's in the library researching these things, not in shackles, just willy-nilly being able to walk about. He gets caught, right? And then the second time, he still is in like the same situation, right? Like they still let him walk around the library without shackles.
No, they had him protected this time.
But listen to this. So, he lost enough weight to squeeze through a hole in the ceiling.
Yeah, that's where I was going to go with that. So he saw that there's a hole above a loose light fixture. He lost weight so he could fit through that hole.
Like 35 pounds or something.
And the crazy thing is, too, is all the inmates that were next to him, they would say, hey, Bundy's up in the roof moving around. Like, we can hear him above ourselves.
Yeah, because he would get up there and practice.
And
they didn't
climb through the ventilation ducts.
Yeah. And they didn't look into it to see what was going on.
They didn't check out his cell?
I have no idea. I don't know if it was on him.
He put books under his blanket to make it appear that he was still in his cell sleeping.
Yeah.
So the crazy thing, too, and I'm trying to find it.
He dropped down from the ducts into one of the guards' apartments in the building,
yep.
Changed into the guards' clothes, and walked out of the prison.
Yep.
And then that's when he got away and fled to,
He
went to Chicago first. But backing up a little bit, the crazy thing with that escape is it was saying in here, like I said, so actually backing up a little bit more, so he got arrested after that. Utah Highway Patrolman got him, but he had a $15,000 bail that his parents paid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And
I would not pay the bail.
Yeah.
Well, at this point, though, I don't think it was for kidnapping, which is still just as bad, but it wasn't for murder. So at this point, he was being tried for that.
They still believed him.
Right.
Yeah. And but he convinced a friend to give him money when he bailed to Florida.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, I was going to say, though, is that they were saying that if he would have just been patient, he could have been a free man, because their evidence wasn't strong enough to hold him, that he could have the evidence for the murder wasn't strong enough. The kidnapping,
he was convicted in Utah to,
for the kidnapping.
So 1 to 15 years.
Yes.
And he actually got
for Durange?
Yes. Yeah. But they couldn't get him on anything else. They found, so he sold his Volkswagen to a kid. They ended up going to that kid and pounding it and found traces of hairs that was linked to three different victims.
Mm-hmm.
And the officers were like, these being here are like circumstantially, you know, it's not possible.
Yeah.
You know, the circumstances. He's like, he is the guy, but I don't think they had enough evidence
to
charge him. But the only thing they had, because of course Durange was alive, is she eyed him out of a lineup, and that was the only thing they had to get him on. So they got him on that, and then Colorado, because of the murders he did there, said, we want to charge him now, yeah, too.
Well, because he escaped Colorado in 77. Yeah, so it wasn't, they found the dead girl in 75 in the snowmass, the Campbell girl. Mm-hmm. And then he was next in Colorado in 77.
Right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just think it's crazy, though, that they were saying that if he would have just been patient, he maybe would have had to spend a year or so in prison for the kidnapping, yeah, served his time for the kidnapping, and then he would have been a free man, like that close. But instead, he let his ego get to him. He didn't want to be held, and that's when he escaped through the ducts.
That power.
Yeah.
And so he escaped from the ducts, and that's when he went to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Chicago, he stole a car and
he got on a train and went to Michigan.
Okay. And then in Michigan, he stole a car and went to Atlanta, right?
Man, he went.
Didn't yeah, he, down yeah, to Georgia.
Yeah, he drove south. Yeah.
Didn't he went, eventually work his way into yep, Florida?
Yeah, south, he went to Atlanta.
Got on a bus to go to Tallahassee.
To go to Tallahassee.
Okay.
And then
he basically
was,
like went in a giant circle.
Right.
Like he escaped Florida. Went to Michigan, or no, went to Chicago, went to Michigan.
He escaped Colorado.
Went to Atlanta. No, this was after Florida.
What?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When he escaped Florida, he walked out of the prison. After leaving jail, he got onto a flight to Chicago, okay, went to Michigan, went to Atlanta, went to Tallahassee.
Hmm. Trying to just do a big...
Like, yeah, like
goose
what...
Goose chase.
Goose what
chase.
What the devil, yeah, like...
Yeah, so he ended up in Florida, and he told himself, he's like, okay... He was quoted saying, he's like, if I can just stop, he planned on getting a normal job and settling down in Florida. And then that's when he got his itch again. Mm-hmm. And that's when he went to the sorority.
But it was even stronger because he was very sloppy. It was.
Well, at this point, he was also on the, that's when he was finally put on the FBI's most wanted list.
Right. And that's when he went into the sorority and went room to room. Wasn't it like four girls?
Yeah, yes.
And four. The crazy thing is he was in hearing distance of 30 other people that didn't hear him. And it was saying the, like, I don't know. I don't want to go into too much detail, but like one of them, it said that he bit her buttock.
Yeah.
And,
buttocks.
Her bum cheek.
Her bum cheek. And,
twice.
I thought he just so bit her
specific.
The once.
Twice.
Cause he,
they
was it the twice?
It's twice, okay, in the same spot, but made it.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the one he beat with the like oak.
All of them he did.
Was it all of them?
Yes.
But yeah, some of the, and a couple of them ended up living, but two of them died, right? Because yes, it was those two that ended up being the yes, case that brought him down.
And the crazy thing is how they think he would have killed everybody in that sorority, but one of the girls came home late.
And the headlights hit the headlights lit up the room and scared him.
And he heard the door open. And
yeah,
she was in a dark part of the hallway or the entryway where he came in, and she saw him just walk right past her.
Well, and so he got away, right? Because then his last victim yes, was a 12-year-old girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I want to say that that was his youngest victim.
Yeah.
At least confirmed. Confirmed.
Yes.
Because then it was after that he finally got caught the final time in 79.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's what was crazy, too, is wasn't he caught...
Or sorry, yeah, in 79. Sorry, 78.
He was caught... Wasn't he caught because the vehicle was reported stolen?
Yeah, and he was driving erratically.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah, right here. So it said that the stolen vehicle, there was sets of IDs belonging to female Florida State University, 21 stolen credit cards, and a television set. And then it was also found a dark rimmed non-prescription glasses, a pair of plaid slacks, and that were later identified as a disguise that he wore to try and kidnap someone else. Cause that's right. He was trying to kidnap another little girl who was like 14, but her older brother came over and scared Ted off. And he claimed to be a firefighter or like the Richard Burton. He said his name was Richard Burton from the fire department in Jacksonville. And so when he got arrested, it said that here he's being transported to jail, unaware that he just arrested FBI's.
They had no idea. Yeah.
Bundy was quoted saying, "I wish you would have just killed me." Because that's right. He ends up kind of fighting and wrestling with the officer trying to get to his gun. Mm-hmm. The officer ended up winning and taking him in.
Yeah. And he sat in prison for 11 years.
Yeah.
Was it 11?
He got the electric chair in 89.
Yeah.
And even then, they still were trying to go for appeals. I think they won one or two, which pushed it off so far.
Well, because then, he was starting
so wild that they could win any.
He was starting to confess, and he'd do it slowly to try to prolong his life.
Until finally they were like, it's going to happen.
That you've told us all you're going
to
give us. Yeah.
At one point, his attorneys reached out to try and get like some kind of affidavit or something from the families of some of his victims to try and help Ted by saying, sign this so he can stay alive longer so that he can possibly say where your family members are. And all the families were like, nope, we don't need that evidence. We know they're dead. We know he did it. Get rid of him.
Yeah.
But on the whole biting thing, that's one thing I thought was crazy, is that was one of the most big evidence that helped, is they brought in, I forgot what they call them specifically, but
wasn't it like his trademark, something like that?
No, here it is. It's an odontologist? Yes, thank you.
Odontologist.
Basically, they...
A teeth specialist. They took a molding of Bundy's teeth and matched it to the bite mark.
Because he had such unique teeth that they said that there's no way it could have been anybody else's teeth.
Well, and it's funny how, and this is not to make light of anything that happened, but it's funny how they always say hindsight's always 20/20. This guy easily could have gotten away. Lived out the rest. He could still be alive to this day if he would have just laid it to rest, escaped out of the United States, something like that. But his ego was too much.
I don't know if it's it's an addiction. I think
it became an addiction for him. But if you think about it, when he would have left and when he went back down to Florida, if he would have just left, like maybe gone to England or somewhere where there's no extradition and just tried to play it calm for a little bit.
He couldn't. That's why they say that those other murders were so, because it wasn't his MO. He kidnapped one at a time, you know what I mean? Or two was in the one case, but it was such a he was more crafty about taking people.
Right.
And with the college or with the dorm room, he just went in there and just went mayhem, and this makes me sick, but they say they could tell who was killed first, like who he attacked first, because they said just the trauma to the bodies would just slowly lighten, like he took everything he had out on the first
like
one.
He was getting tired,
and then getting tired, and then it slowly diminished with each one that he had done. And just like his last victim, the 12-year-old girl, he just grabbed her, like it wasn't trying to trick her or anything, he just went to grab
it's almost him. Like he lost control of his own.
Well, and it said he took a knife to her throat, like where the others he would either beat or strangle her.
And it's interesting because you look at all his previous victims, he took his time with it. Mm-hmm. He basically stashed their bodies and would go back to them until they were too decayed.
I was gonna say that's what was so
the heads and stuff.
I think because he went a while without doing it. He went on a binger, I guess is what he just went.
It's essentially, he was an addict.
Yeah, yep. Exactly.
Well, I was going to say you painted the picture well earlier when you mentioned Dexter. If anyone's watched Dexter, as I listen to a lot of the stuff we're uncovering, I think of that show, and I wouldn't be surprised if their inspiration was Ted Bundy because
how in Dexter, he calls it his dark passenger.
And he would
get to a point where he feels like he's leaving his dark passenger. And then all of a sudden it comes back with a vengeance.
Mm-hmm. And it comes back like an addiction. Like he doesn't want to do it, but like it comes back and it gnaws at him and it's constantly there and he's reminded of it. And like it consumes him until he did something about it. Mm-hmm. And then he'd be good for a while. And then same thing, it would come back.
Now, he was like the prime package for like a killing machine, as you mentioned before, but also he reaped the benefits of a terrible communication system between all the states.
Oh yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, that's,
he knew it. He researched it.
That's what ended up getting him caught as well, is finally it was five states. I want to say it was Washington, Oregon, Utah,
Colorado.
And Florida?
Wasn't it
Florida?
Idaho.
Was it Idaho?
Idaho.
They finally had all their main detectives from each state get together and start sharing the evidence that they had. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember if this was before Florida or what, but yeah, that's when they were finally getting on the same page, mm-hmm. that it's like, hey, we're all chasing the same guy here.
Yep. Yeah.
But,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. I forgot to mention the Idaho. So on his way from Washington to Utah, he picked up a hitchhiker in Idaho and killed her, mm-hmm. as well. Yeah.
So. And he drowned her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, and I honestly like think back to all the things we were told to avoid as children. I feel like he did all of them.
Right.
Maybe like, that's, maybe
you know what I mean? Like, think of how his like reign of terror has affected every aspect of our lives,
of our culture and our life.
And uh-huh. Yeah. And I think that's why he gets brought up so much, is because it's because of him that you don't hitchhike. It's because of him that you don't help some strangers in the middle of the night.
Strangers,
like,
yeah.
Yeah. Like you,
yeah.
Just all that stuff.
My kids walk home from school and we flat out told them, you don't walk home by yourself. You and your sister don't walk home by yourselves. You get in a group, five or six kids.
You stranger danger.
And I've told them flat out too. I said, if it's only two of you guys coming home, you go to the office and you tell them I need to call my parents. And someone will come pick you up.
Well, not to mention too.
Like, I'm not going to let you walk two blocks home for fear of someone like this, is who knows who's out there watching and is going to pull that quick thing of, hey, get in the car real quick. And
I'm afraid of your daddy's.
Yeah.
Well, and that's a couple of things on that. It's like, one, how many of these people did Bundy take that were literally just running out to their car for something? Like it was just that quick.
Mm-hmm.
And then just on the whole kid thing, it's like, you think stranger danger, these kids have it in their head that a stranger is going to be a scary person.
Yeah.
And it's not. I mean, look at Ted, very handsome, very smart, just trustworthy.
Almost.
Suave. Yeah.
You'd be very unaware.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Well, and you guys have heard about Ted Bundy's cellar.
Cellar
here in Utah.
Have you? It's here in Utah.
Oh, is that the cave?
It's a straight up like cellar.
That's up in Immigration Canyon.
Yep.
Oh, dang. It's like got a legit door.
Yeah. It's got a door. That's like a thing for air and whatnot.
Now, this
is, you can find it easily on Google.
This isn't the American Fork cave thing, right?
No,
this
is a different one. That's his cave. This is called the cellar.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, this is another one of those things like fact or urban legend. Like it's hard to tell, but they claim that this is a place where he murdered probably around 12 people.
Hmm.
Did they find bodies in there?
And he would store them in there. Yeah. That I don't know. I was trying to look that up. Like there was a story of a guy. I was just reading a story of a guy who spent the night in there, and like his experience was so terrifying that he says he's going to regret it the rest of his life. Like it still haunts him.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was just going to say this taking place here in Utah. My mom growing up down in, I want to say she grew up in Pinedale, or is that a city here in Utah? Maybe it was
Pinedale's in Wyoming.
Maybe it was in Alpine. I can't think of anyway,
down
there by Alpine. She actually, my mom knows someone who met Ted Bundy at some point, like just dirty.
Well, yeah, seriously, think about all those people who knew him or met him by happenstance.
Yeah.
Like hearing the news of this, like how would that affect your psyche? Like knowing you essentially
question everything,
know that you were, if you were a brunette woman, you were inches from death.
Could you imagine if you went to church with him?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, he was in our congregation.
Imagine being the missionary that baptized him.
Oh my gosh. Right?
So
I'm surprised he didn't burn in the water.
Right? For real.
Yeah.
So I was going to say, on the whole, like being convincing, he got married while in prison. So found a Florida law that states that if you are in front of a judge when you like announce your engagement, you are legally married.
Didn't we talk about this in our weird laws video?
Kind of, but that was a different state. It wasn't Florida.
Yeah. That was a hotel too.
Yeah, it was
that's right. That's
it was
right.
Just saying that you're married out in public. You're now
married.
Married. So in Florida, they had that. So
his longtime girlfriend?
No.
Or a different
girl? It wasn't the Washington girlfriend. It was this other one that he had been dating for a while. And I want to say they either went to school together. Like she was a law student, like a classmate, or they were on like the political party together. But they knew each other somehow. And she was on the witness stand because she had followed Bundy's cases. She had... she was a witness on his side, both in Utah, Colorado, and Florida. And it was in Florida that he asked her to marry him. She said yes. And so just like that, they are now legally married.
And he did it in the courtroom while she was on the witness stand.
And he was questioning her because he was his own attorney.
So do you think that was just him trying to do one lot, like be like, oh, look how smart I am. Do you think that's why you would do something like that?
I don't know. Just for the attention.
Yeah.
And then later, it was saying that, so he was not allowed to have visits. However, inmates could pay the guards to allow them alone time with their female partner. She ends up pregnant and has a daughter that she claimed was Bundy's. And,
to this day, she still claims that.
Yes. But, they've now basically disappeared. That it's, it's said you that
change your name. Like,
well, and that's what's funny too. So she divorced him. I think it was like 3 years before his execution, and she divorced him because he confessed. She was disappointed in him for basically admitting that he was guilty.
My goodness.
And I don't think it was so much that she was mad that he finally gave up. It was that I want to say she was seriously thought he was innocent. And so when he finally came out and said that he was guilty, then she was sickened and left him, took the daughter. They said that they don't think the daughter ever met him. She probably never told the daughter who her father was. I mean, I wouldn't.
How would you label that?
And then, appeal after appeal, they kept postponing the execution. And it was finally, when was it? January 24th, 1989, that he was finally executed by electric chair. And they said that people literally cheered.
I can guarantee it, man.
Cheered. They were lighting off fireworks when the hearse was pulling out with his body. I mean, people were ecstatic.
Yeah.
Heck yeah. Quick side note, the cellar, it was actually next to his house. So that's how they know it was his. So his house was there, and then next to it was the cellar, but the house has been demolished. The cellar's still there.
Creepy. So the cellar it's been confirmed that
So here's a question, because, and this is the craziest thing about all this is the biggest problem with the communication between the states was prevalent in him making his reign of terror.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
You fast forward 30 years, that's not even going to happen anymore because states are communicating like crazy. You even fast forward to today, a serial killer of even his caliber isn't going to last very long because they've got security cameras everywhere. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you think of like a kidnapping. I mean, every single person's phone goes off with that Amber Alert.
Oh, and it's every time it goes off,
come on.
No, it's like a fist pump. Like, yes, this is why I love tech.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, these people are going to get caught in a matter of hours, not even days.
Well, I mean, to your point, there's this, I watched this Netflix documentary. It was, it's called Murder Family. And it's about this wife and two children who were killed and stuffed into like an oil tank out in an oil field.
Yeah, and I want to cover that one in another episode because no, that story is insane.
But tech is a big reason he got caught.
Yeah.
But yeah, like and tell me if you guys have ever felt this way. I just growing up, I would see stuff like this, like Ted Bundy stuff, or I'd watch TV shows where they'd portray a serial killer or something like that. And I remember as a kid, I would get so angry, like at this person, what they would do. Like I would dream, like not to be a serial killer myself, but I would dream of like almost being a vigilante and like going out with a bat and just like destroying
these people. Dude, I had those same types of dreams. Yeah.
Like I would get so mad that I would. This is going back to our other podcast. Like, this is an instant where I'm like, murder, heck yeah. Well, like, if I'm taking out a serial killer all day.
Yeah.
It's like bringing Dexter back up. You know, luckily, in Dexter's situation, he had the serial killer tendencies. His police father recognized it at a young age and guided him to use it for good. And
he was a serial killer of killers.
Yeah.
And I need to watch this show.
It's so wild, dude. Good. It's so good. I love
Dexter.
And they're coming back.
Yeah. I know. I need to get on top of that.
But yeah, like.
Oh, and I was going to hurry and say too, before Bundy, like, he tried to help find that other serial killer, the Green River Killer. I can't remember his actual name. I was trying to find it here.
They tried to form a duo.
But anyway, the FBI serial killer squad.
Yeah.
He helped him.
Oh, that's right.
This Green River Killer still ended up on the rampage for 30 years. He actually was like the second most. He had the second most kills, at least proven.
Really?
Wow. And how they caught him, too, is he flat out told him. He said, watch the, because they found a body or whatever, and they said, watch the graveside. It's a freshly dug grave. Watch it. He'll return. And sure enough, the guy showed up to the graveside. And that's how they caught him.
Even sociopaths are creatures of habit.
Yeah. Well, because that's what Ted Bundy did. How many times did he return back to
like his cell body? And stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. One of them, he described a crime scene as if it just happened yesterday. And it was one of his Washington crime scenes. Like it was years and years ago, but he could describe it like it was yesterday because he spent so much time there.
You just keep going back to it.
Now, what do you guys think is the fascination with serial killers? Like looking in recent years, it's almost like exploded. Like there's podcasts on podcasts, documentaries, all kinds of stuff. All about these serial killers. Like, what do you guys think is the fascination the world has with them?
I think the obvious answer is the psychology behind it. I think what is going on in their head? Is it an actual chemical imbalance? Is it the way they were raised?
It's just the unknown, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Same thing with like growing up when like space was just, and it's still very much unknown. But I remember in the 90s, dude, space was like, wow.
Yeah.
I think part of it too is how people like horror movies and stuff like that, that thrill when they start researching this, I think they still get that same like thrill of like this, just, it's so creepy. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Almost like an adrenaline rush. Yeah,
an adrenaline about it. Cause it's, you know, it's real. So that makes it even worse to where it's just, I don't know, man. I don't know if that's what it is or not, but
I think you're right. I think it's the trying to make sense of the insensible, like you're like trying to understand this person that everyone looks at it and sees the actions he took and just goes, why? Like how could somebody
do that?
How could they be pushed to that? How could they get to that level? And everyone, we want to know. And we're never going to know. Mm. I don't think we'll ever get an answer.
Well, it's because we're not that person.
We're not wired.
So it's
like
not going to make sense to us.
Yeah.
It's like how we said at the beginning of this, how Bundy at a teenage level was looking at horrible crime magazines, like factual crime magazines, and liked it. Where a normal person, you know, if you were told, it's like, here, we need you to look at these photos to identify a crime, you're going to be sick to your stomach trying to look through these photos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, out of curiosity, and this is a totally weird question to ask, but both extremely evil, right? Like, we've talked about Adolf Hitler in the past and now Ted Bundy, but did Adolf Hitler himself, did he ever kill anyone? Like, himself?
I heard he did horrible experiments.
But did he? Well,
that's, I see what you're saying. That's a good question.
Did he actually do
like,
it?
Or did he have actually do it? Or did he, like, how did he actually get a rise to power? Was it through violence? Or did he create a group of people who would do his bidding for him?
That's what he did. He had close people. You want to answer? You
can. I was going to say his rise to power was charismatic. He was piggybacking off of the embarrassing defeat from World War One, mm-hmm. and how the country, Germany, was in a fragile state. And he basically played to that and said, we're going to come back. We're going to be better than ever. And very much like Bundy, was manipulative and charismatic, yep. and convinced everybody that they were, you know,
his way.
One of the best countries in the world, and they were going to come back and they were going to be better and make the world so great. And
I heard some of his speeches were incredible. Like, he could get a crowd so pumped.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was Time Magazine's Man of the Year, like, a year or two before the war.
But
would slowly warm them up to it too. Like, he'd start doing little things and then slowly brought it to where it became where it was.
So
during the Reich.
Did he himself ever actually kill anyone?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I heard he performed horrible experiments on people that in the end probably killed them.
But he didn't do that personally. He had doctors doing that.
Did he? Yeah. At the height of the war, he was researching every way to possibly win. Like, I mean, there's tons of documentaries today, like, that look into the creations of the German army. Like, they made some massive creations. They were the first ones to come out with a jet. They created things that supposedly were like flying saucers, time travel. They looked into the occult. They did
experiments. I've heard, sadly, a lot of our medical knowledge is because of some of the horrible experiments that he had done.
And some of the doctors that defected from that, or the research they did. But
just to like finish my question, I'm trying to like in my mind, like, where are these people?
I'm sure they have similarities.
Yeah. But I'm also curious, like, if you had to pick, I mean, obviously both did terrible things, but it almost in a way, like Ted Bundy in my mind, like the way that he did things, and I haven't looked that heavily into Hitler, like what he would do, but I know he had armies of people that did terrible things, and maybe it's because Ted Bundy's so close to home, but man, I feel like a deep, ominous, just hatred and fear from Ted Bundy.
I think what I'm grasping from what you're saying is like, it's what they say about murder. If you murder someone with a gun, that's pretty typical. If you murder them with a knife, it's personal.
Yeah.
Like it's kind of a different level. Like Ted Bundy did these things directly himself.
Yeah.
And whereas as Adolf Hitler, like led the Reich, which ended up in killing millions upon millions of people and millions of Jews specifically.
Yeah.
And so like that was a direct result of what he wanted to happen, but he didn't do it technically himself. Like he didn't pull the trigger. Yeah. But
well, and they say Bundy did it out of a hatred for women. Like he had, I read it somewhere that the way he would do it and different things, he had such a hatred for women.
A possessiveness about him too. Yeah.
But also a specific looking woman.
Right.
And so, you know what's crazy?
Toward someone specific.
Another parallel, right? Adolf really wanted the blonde hair, blue eye
race. The Aryan race.
And here we have another guy.
That's the part that always drives me nuts.
Yeah, which he wasn't. But then we also have another serial killer here. Not Utonium. just on your topic here. Well, but like Ted Bundy had his type.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they both had their types.
Yeah.
I honestly think at the end of the day, one of the biggest factors in all this is that pride in wanting the power and control.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird? It's both situations.
Crazy. Well, power and control. Narcissism too.
Mm-hmm. So I mean, to answer, oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, Hitler killed himself. Bundy wanted to kill himself. He did not want to go on death row because he didn't want...
They want to do it under their own terms.
Exactly. He wanted to disappoint them that they didn't get to kill him. He wanted to kill himself and never had the opportunity.
There's something so satisfying knowing that it was the electric chair.
Yeah, really. For really, though. For real.
Yeah.
I kind of wish it was...
I would put it on a low voltage.
Oh, yeah.
At first, just like...
We're going to marinate him for an hour and, you know.
Do a Green Mile style.
I don't know. But to answer your question about Adolf Hitler, there is no evidence that he personally by his own hand killed anyone.
Really?
There's speculation.
And in a way, that's almost scarier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's convincing other people to do it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Manson family.
Oh, yeah.
So Charles Manson had convinced these people to kill this actress and some other people. Like, it was a cult-like existence. Like, you could almost say the same thing about the Reich to a point. It was almost a cult.
Yeah.
And like, some people were all in it, knew what was going on, and were doing it. Other people were convinced by the outside of it and didn't know what they were actually participating in.
And I also wonder if, in my mind, and I hope that none of this is coming across as if, like, I'm downplaying Hitler. Like, Hitler is a demon. Yeah. But I also think the numbers in my head, I can actually fathom the numbers of Bundy versus Hitler. Like, when you say millions, that is such an unfathomable number. Like, I can't wrap my head around that. Whereas I can hear 30, 90, 100. I can picture 100 people.
Well,
and that is personal, like, and it like makes it so much more personal.
I think the fact that it was one man.
Yeah.
That from one possibly man. A teenage age to what is 30s, 40s. So in, we'll say, a 20-year lifespan, killed possibly 100 people.
So here's another thing too. Do you think Hitler had an end game of how he thought things were supposed to be? So do you think he actually took pleasure in what he was doing, like Ted Bundy did? Because Ted Bundy took pleasure in
it. Yeah, you make a good point there too.
That's crazy.
Like, I think Hitler took pleasure in the power, not so much the actual murder itself.
That's what I mean. I have no idea. But
I almost
to
downplay him, I almost get like a Thanos type vibe where, in his weird, sick, twisted way, he thinks he's doing what's best for society.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Ted Bundy is purely just a dark, sexual, sadistic pleasure.
Yeah.
So, and that's the other scary thing, too, is like Ted Bundy died 2 years after we were alive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we were alive in the time of Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
We were very far away from the time of Hitler.
Yeah. That's true, too. Well, I think at some point we should do a deep dive on Hitler. I would be very intrigued. I don't know what we can uncover there.
We could go into the conspiracy of him being alive.
Yeah, we could.
Anyway, before we kind of get off too far, I'm going to call it quits for tonight because I feel like we covered Bundy pretty well. I hope you as a crowd enjoyed this. I hope you didn't find it too dark and depressing. We wanted this to be more of kind of documentary type style. So
intriguing.
Kind of like a conversation almost.
Yeah. Kind of give our take on what we thought of it. And if you enjoyed this, you know, let us know. Cause even though it's a heavy topic, it would be interesting to go into other serial killers or Hitler, like you said, and maybe see what we could bring up there. So
let us know who you think we should talk about.
Yeah,
you got any specific?
Always down for suggestions.
Serial killers you want to hear about?
Maybe those that we don't know too much about that we ourselves could learn more.
Zodiac killer, Black Dahlia murders.
Yeah,
ooh, Zodiac's one of my favorite.
I know.
And just recently they cracked one of his codexes.
Yes.
Yeah. I know we like to keep things light here, but we also like to venture into unique spaces and
darkness
between conspiracy and cold-blooded killers. We're all over the map, but we hope you enjoy the content just the same. Yeah. I had a lot of fun listening to you guys go on about this because
we knew a lot more than I expected.
You guys did know a lot. You knew a lot.
But thanks for joining us tonight, crowd. You guys have a good night. We'll talk to you next week.
Yeah. Thanks for being part of this crowd.
Ciao.
Bye. Take care.